This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We are on remote again. And today, Terry Cross Davis is here with a new book, and she's going to read a poem from that book, and then we'll hear all about it.
Grace, it's so lovely to be with you again.
Isn't it great? It's just like old times.
It is.
12 years ago. I've been watching your moves, Terry. I've been watching your moves like a meteor, though, in the background. So let's hear your voice.
Oh, well, then great. I will just jump in and I'll start off with an early poem from the book From A More Perfect Union. And this poem is called A Black Woman Gets a Window Seat on Aer Lingus. Enough, Ireland. For all your lush effusion of color, inside me blooms a masochistic loneliness. Give me the screws I know best, the policeman quick to test my yes, sir, as assetless. Trigger the Midwest. Never on the Bible school test was this. Crucifixion kills, not nails into feet or wrist, but the weight borne upon the breast. You suffocate slowly in your own flesh. As I return to the upright cross of the U.S., I breathe easier. I breathe less.
The upright cross.
Yes.
What a great image. Tell us about your experience with Ireland. What's the connection?
Well, I had gone two summers in a row, the summer of 2016 when my first book came out, and then in 2017 when the anthology I'm in with my collective, Black Ladies Brunch Collective, came out. And
so it was poetry business in Ireland?
Yes, it was. And it was great poetry business. It was great to be there and claim myself as a poet and be seen as a poet.
Here it is. This is the new book, A More Perfect Union, and it's an award-winning book already. And it's about time, because how long ago did you produce Haint?
That was in 2016.
Yeah, that was 5 years ago, if I'm right. Yes. So Terry Cross Davis is a pillar of our poetry community, a poetry citizen in the Republic. Let's talk about what this book has in it. What do you think you wrote about?
In many ways, for me, I wanted to write a kind of game plan, a layout of what a future of this country could look like, what we had to acknowledge and address in the past, and how we have, in my mind, I keep thinking this country has failed my grandmothers, both my grandmothers.
Mm-hmm. Did you write that line?
I did not write that.
Okay, now's the time to write that line. Go ahead.
I hear you, Grace. Because I just look back, and for me, it feels like the going back two generations makes it as distinct as possible. What opportunities those women had, and what opportunities I have, and it just came crystal clear as I had my own daughter and thought about her opportunities and her choices. And when I turned 21, I actually asked my grandmothers, my mother, what they were doing. And they were all married with children. And I was single in grad school with a looming trip to Africa as the end result of that graduate experience. And, you know, nothing on the boards for, you know, future husband or family or house or anything like that. I was free. I was a free agent. And I recognized what that meant to me when I asked all those women that question. And saw kind of how, and not to say that marriage and motherhood are jails, they're not. But there are sometimes choices that are thrust upon people who don't have other avenues.
And I would like to speak to that, because I think that is the distinction in this book. The way you talk about Black motherhood is unequaled. I read a lot of poetry. I think I know the poets. No one has become as intimate with that subject as you have in this book. Even Lucille Clifton uses motherhood more in a cultural context. You get right down to the blood and the breast milk. That is significant. It doesn't happen anywhere else. Are you aware of that?
I am not, but I will take that and hold that to my heart.
It is really, you've got a corner on the market, because I look at Claudia Rankine. What does she talk about? Audre Lorde. What does she talk about? I have read in my long life. I believe I know the poetry, and nobody gets it into the body about being a Black mother, as you do in this book, which we will talk about later on in the program. But right now, I want everyone to hear another poem. Terry Cross Davis. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress.
So here is The Goddess of Scars. I mark you with melanin, a crosshatch of collagen. Better the scar than the loss of limb. Better the clean line, raised itch, festering wound, beckoning death. My apostles, my keloids, my atrophic, my contractures, my hypertrophic response. Each a love I bear to the mammal of you, the ruptured vessel, the broken in dermis. Consider my evolution a song to survival. Consider cells my priests, their work a ladder of prayer, each stitch an epistle. I grieve to see you separate from yourself. My atonement is a bridge to build you back together. While you can never be born again, you can recover. Each time I sign you, witness the parable of action and consequence. I do not think you show enough reverence. You were never meant to be a smooth canvas, but a texture, a testament. I bless you with a story, and each and every time you live to tell the tale.
You bring it home. The mammal of you, the body as the vessel of the spirit. You're all about that, but you don't hesitate to go with the body. And right. You talk about that physicality so that it amplifies what it holds. That is the distinction in this book. I'm trying to tell you what you wrote, Terry. Get it in your head. I want everyone to know that she is the author of this, A More Perfect Union. And that was already awarded the 2019 Journal Charles B. Wheeler Poetry Prize. And her former book, Haint, was awarded the 2017 Ohio Anna Book Award for Poetry. She is the winner of the Poetry Society of America's 2020 Robert H. Winter Memorial Award. Does it feel good to be noticed?
It does. It really does. It makes me feel as if I'm succeeding with what I want to do on the page. And that is, I want to write the bare, honest truth of it. I want to be real, and I want to let the veracity of the reality of my existence bear witness on the page.
But to be heard is very important, and to have an imprimatur of an award is really a lovely kiss on the cheek that says, go ahead, keep going, keep going. You know, awards don't change the praise of eggs, you know, or they don't get rid of a headache, but they do have a value. I'm really in favor of recognitions like this. But more than anything, I want you to talk about motion in a poem. The last poem you read, moved, moved, moved. How do you do it?
I've been thinking more and recognizing what other influences are at play in my work. And sound is a big influence, sound and rhythm. I'm a child of the 80s, so hip hop was born. And that quick succession of rhyme has always been in my head, because that's the defining moment for me as a child in middle school and junior high, when all of a sudden rap became huge and people were doing rap battles on the back of the bus or at the bus stop. And I never contributed anything to those rap battles, but I listened. I mean, what do poets do? But we just pay attention, right? Mm-hmm. And we soak it all in. And so that comes to the forefront when I have moments where I'm trying to find a good rhythm in the poem, and all of a sudden all those internal rhymes and slant rhymes come forward in my head and I hear them. And so I try and honor that rhythm by establishing it on the page. And so that, I think that helps me a lot, because it also helps me move down the page, move the poem.
Right, down is good. And your vowels and consonants click. Also, the structure of the poem, I think the vertical that you do when you make short line lengths, that moves us quickly on. So emotion is essential. Motion to move that person from one line to the other. You got it going on. Let's hear if you can write more poetry. Let's have another one. Terry Cross Davis, I'm Grace Cavalieri.
This one is called Co-Sleeping. Years from now, when they are teens out studying the art of lying, I am told I will treasure this imperfect sleep. 2 and 4-year-old feet in my back and stomach, soft bodies fattened by my milk, such slight impressions they make on a queen-size mattress. My weight, a well, sinks them closer. I breathe in the stupor of their sweet rot breath. My children are alive. I taste the words, lull them in my mouth like a chewed pacifier. Each heat exhalation secure knowledge. I swaddle this fact, fold it tight, tuck in its edges, wrap it again, alive, in this moment, on this night. I burrow in, knowing sleep won't come, but curl around them a shield, settled and still.
That's what I'm talking about, because women in history did not write about domesticity until about the 50s. I think Elizabeth Bishop sitting at her kitchen looking out the window might be the first we notice. And I think it's because that's all we had at some point. Women were relegated to service and to the house. So poets disregarded that. So I value very much when domesticity is exalted and elevated this way, and the baby by your side is noticed, where years before it would not have been thought of as a valuable image. You see, we really, it's a cultural fact that all the things we did before were not considered important. So when you go to this sweet intimacy, it's like something new is happening in poetry again. That's the way I feel.
I felt that too. And I felt a reclamation had to occur, that we had to honor these spaces, these domestic spaces. And it seems as if domestic seemed to be a bad word for so long. And because it had been relegated to women as the nurturers in a society where we're so about performing gender, that because women were relegated to that space was no longer important.
But you got it. I've seen
so much strength. Who we are comes out of those spaces. Who we are cut, what cloth we're cut from comes from those spaces. So how can that not be important, right?
But to know what is basic is beautiful, that everything is divine, is in this book. So we want to hear more. Terry Cross Davis, she also has been in print quite a bit online. She's all over the place, actually, and in journals and anthologies, including the Academy of American Poets, no small thing, Harvard Review, another biggie, Pank, Poetry Ireland Review, Kenyon Review, more and more and more, fellowships and scholarships to Kaveh Kahnem, Hedgebrook, and more. And God help her. Keep going. Another poem.
This one, when I mentioned the Black Ladies Brunch Collective, and in that anthology, at the time there were 6 of us in the collective, and it's just focusing on our bodies of work, we had to respond to another poet's work from the collective. So there's this great poet, Saida Agostini, and she wrote a poem called Harriet Tubman is a Lesbian. And I loved it for the reclamation of Harriet Tubman, to giving queer idols from the past, elevating the idea of queer idols from the past, and giving, you know, people a different arena, a different way to look at these historical figures, and to claim them for marginalized communities that don't have those figures to claim. So I thought that was important, and I love the poem. So here is my response to Harriet Tubman is a Lesbian by Saida Agostini, and it's called Knowledge of the Brown Body. If Harriet Tubman had been a lesbian, I would know the brown body had been valued outside of chattel to the point of risk. I would know an ebony nipple spoke its hushed volumes from inside another sweet brown mouth, eager to know its secrets. I would know a brown belly had been showered with a free tongue's pulsing intention. I would know the brown hips of a woman were stolen back for freedom's sake. I would know that brown thighs thunder was enough to make a woman walk into the abyss of the Deep South and come out clapping on fire with black love. I would know that this body I own had once been coveted for its sake and its sake alone. How sacred I could hold that knowledge. I could palm it, my fingers deep inside the agent that helped break the back of the Confederacy.
I do not know the original poem that you apprenticed to. So how is yours different?
Well, in Saida's poem, she imagines this whole scenario in which Harriet Tubman is lesbian and she goes back to get a lover who's like Phyllis Hyman. And then they have this great session and of making out and all the things that come from this century and that century all combined to create this glorious moment of love, of Black love between women. And
but you did what Terry Cross Davis does. You went deeper.
I had to think about, because I love the idea of, and not that it's an idea, it's the truth, it's the fact of Harriet Tubman as a spy who helped break the Confederacy. I love the idea of when a woman's body is loved by another woman, it means that on the surface of it, it's not about the intention of making children. It's just to love that body.
Whoa. Did you say that? It's not about the intention of making children. Did you say that in the poem?
I did. What did I say? I said something along the lines of, you know, it was, I would know that it was enough to make a woman go into the deep south. This body I own had once been coveted for its sake and its sake alone.
Yeah, but that was another line you can write down.
Yeah, because it's something like, and so that's what I wanted to get to. Like, there is a purity of that love. Like, you don't second guess it as much. And
I never thought of that.
And for the reality that I wanted to create for the poem, that was the reality that I wanted to live in. And the idea that a Black woman's body could be loved, that someone would risk everything for it, just for the chance to get to it, to love up on it, to touch it, and appreciate and admire it. And it's right now, it's not a feeling that I feel is pervasive in our society in America, that Black women are to be treasured to this point. But I treasure who we are, and I treasure myself and my glorious friends. You know, I treasure that Black female body.
But somebody had to say it, Terry. Somebody had to say it out loud. That's when treasuring starts.
Yes.
You've just got to notice it first. And once again, you go right into the vessels. You do not put it in a historical context only. So that's your gift. And the body is interesting because it's really a symbol to you of so many ramifications, so many historical meanings, and so many longings, and so many achievements. So we're getting a really good sense of this book, and let's get more of it. This is Terry Cross Davis, and the book I'm going to hold up, I never know how to do this on camera, but it's A More Perfect Union, and it is available right now. You can run, row, or swim to Amazon.
Well, this is another goddess poem. For this book, I created 9 different goddesses. When we talk about the domesticity, when we talk about the things that happen within the realm of our world as women, those are the things that I wanted to highlight. Those are the things that I wanted to just place on this pedestal and say, this is worth exaltation. So our anger is worth exaltation. We deserve to be angry and to have those moments. So I had to create a goddess of anger. And this is her. This is her voice. The goddess of anger. Did he touch you? Did he hit you with jagged words or closed fists? Did he laugh at you? Were you polite even then? Were you lava under the skin? Then let me in. Unsheath the dagger of me. You've tasted pain, now let me master it. Let me in. I'll use the dust of his bones for tea. I'll rise vengeful and caustic, a florid fury steeped in seething. I'll make his eyes bleed. Let me in. I'll dissect him unflinchingly. A backhand slap, a rake of fingernails. I'll spit my small mercies. I'll dance on him in stilettos. Paint my toenails OPI red while the blood congeals. Let me be your ignition point, your pitch, the whoosh of hot, sweet breath. I'm all your swallowed heat simmered into flesh. I, too, can lift burdens. Let go of fear of retribution. Let go of decorum and shame. Ride rage until it bucks, then jump on it again. Damn it, let me in.
You know, were you ever unable to do that? I've had a marriage of 60 years until Ken passed, but in the beginning, I couldn't say anything angry. And did you ever have that experience in a relationship? It took a long time. And then the first thing I did was write a note. There, that was a strong memo, you know, and leave it on Ken's pillow. And gradually, it took a long time before I knew that I could express. And this is a real thing for women. So you have said something.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, it's about being able to express that anger in public. And that's something I've never felt comfortable in doing because of being a Black woman. Anytime anger comes out, there's the fear of fulfilling a stereotype, but then there's also the fear that is the backlash. I've had people tell me that I'm intimidating and I'm 5'3". And, you know, so I'm like, how intimidating am I? But it just, so that's a lot of where some of this goddess lives, is that as Black women, we're not allowed anger. And then as women, we're not allowed anger, because who wants to become the shrew? Who wants to become the one who's harried and picking, and all these negative stereotypes that exist within our society that are attributed to women when we speak up? And so, yeah, it's a minefield to navigate all these ways in which we're supposed to be, but we're not allowed to be, all the ways in which people are afraid we'll become, but we really want to grow. And it's just a minefield in America, being a woman.
I like that, a minefield in America. Do you have that line written down?
I do not.
Boy, you have got some work to do.
It's
a good thing we talk. It's a good thing we talk. Not a moment too soon, but you know, it is, and it's a mindful in relationships. I teach the great wilderness with my students, where people have to go into the wilderness and talk about things that were, when they come out, they're filled with thorns and blood. Because mm-hmm. if we don't do it on the page, if the thought form, everything believes begins with a thought form. When you put this goddess on the page, all of a sudden, you have made something that did not exist before. Now we have a reference point. You know, I love what Dorian Lux said when she said, I love poetry. It's on the new Writer's Almanac today. Garrison Keillor's reading it. I love poetry. And this is one of the reasons I love it. To put a thought form out there that becomes a blueprint for society. Don't have you not been influenced by poetry?
I have every day.
It's the only way I understand the world.
Same.
So thank you for letting us understand more and go on. We want to understand more and more.
Here's a poem called When I Am the Only One in the Room. And it's about code switching. When I am the only one in the room, the southern roots of y'all makes music in my mouth's map. In the north, I cuff the C hard in couplet. Then soften it for child and chain. When booking, I drop the G. Depending on the audience, I find it again running. By 10, I knew when to let the W whistle and whom, but darken the room for the D to fall asleep in. I don't know nothing, but the beauty of when a double negative will do. How to make this English buck, then soft shoe when I see you.
I saw Kamala Harris do that at Howard when she gave a speech. She just kind of ripped her words a little differently and just got a little attitude in them. And it is just so interesting, but I've never seen anyone write about the truth of that.
It is. You get to a point where you realize you've adapted to an environment to make yourself palatable in so many different ways. And as women, we know this too. You know,
I know I, for a long time when I was invited like to someplace fancy, like Yale, I sounded not like myself. Then all of a sudden I realized that I could take Trenton with me. And guess what? It didn't hurt a bit. If you don't like it, sue me. I'm from Trenton. And I really made me so much more comfortable in life because I used to talk like a scholar. Oh my God, it was horrible. I'm so embarrassed. Okay. What's the next thing you're going to read?
This is called Partus Sequitur Ventrum.
Ah, Latin.
Yes, yes. And it has an epigraph or epithang, as Miss Lucille liked to call them.
Oh, yes.
I can never forget that because I thought that was great, an epithang. And the epithang reads, a Latin phrase that stands for the principle that the children of an enslaved woman are themselves born as slaves and owned by their mother's master. Partus sequitur ventrum, and this is in two parts. One, mourning. His knobby six-year-old knees, his anxious pace as if to keep step with the question's steady overflow. Is there a giant octopus in the Bermuda Triangle? How is paper made? How do fireworks know when to explode? No one told me black boys could burn so bright. Wait, I am wrong. The dark sky has seen their fire, snuffed by white hoods, malevolent blue eyes and bluer uniforms. White women's screams all have been matched to their tender wood. So I hug my son tight, kiss the curl crop so close it's straight. My mother eye insatiable. He is dessert, and I'll always have seconds. Each morning I lick my thumb, clean him up good, wishing in vain the amniotic sac had dried to armor. Two, night. His lisp, loose, syrupy sweet, sneaks into my ear. Feel its heat. Small source, more flicker than flame, flanked by arms still dreaming of muscle, he claims my squishy stomach the best pillow. If the security of our locked arms can extend beyond growth spurts, clocks, calendars, to the someone interviewing him, to the someone following him in the store, to the someone holding my son's life in trembling fingers poised above a phone's keypads. Let my love be a note safety pin to his chest. Send him back alive, unharmed. As a black mother in America, I know my whales are birthright, pinned with iron, pinned in ink.
Oh, my breaking heart. Yes. There goes my heart. There goes my heart. Terry Cross Davis is the poetry coordinator for the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington. Hell of a job. And I wrote her a note once and said, please know that presenting poetry can take away your own time. But have you carved out a space in a way for yourself?
I have. The pandemic threw it all off schedule. Because the carving of space for me was getting away, was going to a residency. Or going to a retreat. And that would be the time where everything else that's flooded and pinned up in the dartboard of my brain, I can take the pen out and examine and have time with it. And in the last year, I've not had that time. It's been absorbed by this unusual circumstance of being home and being home with two children and a husband who's working from home. And it just...
Do you have four computers?
We do. We do.
Yeah, yeah. But you did it.
Yeah.
You did it. It's over mostly, right? The kids are going back to school?
They are back in school. And well, you know, it's summertime now, so they're home all day. Yeah. And I have to figure out better schedules to keep them occupied. But I'll be, you know, I'll get a chance to leave and write in the next week. And yeah. Next month. And
but
so
you have a very public, a very public job where you have to be, you know, you have to get on that new designer outfit and stand on that stage and choose your poets. And man, it takes everything. It takes 80% of your thinking. So I just am happy to see this, which proves that you have kept 20% for yourself. And we look for the next book. I feel it coming. I feel it coming. And now a final poem.
Right, right. And so this poem is called Thank You, Jesus. When the blue and red sirens pass you, when the school calls because your child beat the exam and not a classmate, when the smartphone drops but does not crack, the rush escaping your mouth betrays your upbringing, Thank you, Jesus. A balm over the wound. When the mammogram finds only density, when the playground tumble results in a bruise, not a broken bone, like steam from a hot tea kettle. Thank you, Jesus. And the pent-up fear vents upward, out. Maybe it's a hand over breast, supplication learned deeper than flesh, as if one could shush the soul, the fluttering heartbeat, with three words. Maybe it's not so dire, an almost trip on the sidewalk, the accumulated sales total showing savings upon savings. Maybe it's as small as an empty seat on the metro. Or maybe, thank you, Jesus, becomes the refrain every time your husband pulls into the driveway, alive and whole, and no one has mistaken him for all the black scary things. You mutter it, helpless to stop yourself from the invocation of a grandmother who gave you your first Bible. You say it because your mother, even knowing your doubt as a vested commodity, still urges prayer. You learned early to cast the net. Thank you, Jesus. And it's a sweet needle that gathers the fraying thread, hemming security in steady stitches. From birth, you've heard this language. As an adult, you've seen religion used nakedly as ambition. Yet, this sacrifice of praise still slips past your lips, this lyrical martyr of your darn faith.
You had me at the title. You had me at the title. And thank you, Terry Cross Davis. That is the voice of Terry Cross Davis. And this is the Poet and Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan family. Thank you. And support from the Sinipid Fund. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.